chat. Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share. That same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc, I rip to a tear. Switch a scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope. Yo man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti Media Radio. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in and welcome back. We haven't been with you for a few days, and then we took a couple shows off last week, but that's probably not going to happen. In the near future, we're going to be here every day, every week, 5 days a week. Make sure you tune in to all of our shows. If you miss us, catch us on YouTube, catch us on the show archives here on UCY, either way. You can keep up with what we're talking about, and hopefully it's a little bit different than what the mainstream crap is being spewed out there, because we all know that's, for the most part, a big distraction or a big joke or part of fulfilling some kind of agenda. But we do have plenty of news for you tonight, and we're going to hopefully have D.B. Schwazy on the show later on, our longtime co-host. And I'm also joined in the studio tonight by Hamman Lopez, one of our awesome team members here at the Anti-Media. How are you crazy tonight, Hamman?
I'm pretty good, man. I'm excited to be here.
So we're gonna talk about a bunch of things tonight. Big things going on in Europe with the Greece crisis. That's one of the top news stories that I think deserves a lot of attention, because there's no telling what's there's no telling what's going to amount to what's going on in Greece. But we're going to get into that once we get deep on the line. And
I'm here, Nick. Sorry about that.
All right, awesome, man. So DB's here online. We already have a couple callers on.
What's up, DB?
What's up?
So first, we're going to go into this breaking news stuff, which is what's going on with Greece, and that's what I want to talk about first. Those that aren't aware, the banks in Greece over the weekend have been closed, and they didn't reopen today. In fact, they're going to be closed until July 5th, so they're basically going to be closed all week. And the whole reason is because the IMF is trying to collect on some debt, and the Greek people are pretty unwilling to pay it. That's evidenced by the Syriza party, which they elected in the last elections, and they were an anti-austerity party, and they won, and now they're kind of following through on what they said they were going to do, which is not pay this stuff back. And now there's this big, you know, run on the banks, more or less, that's going on in Greece, and it's something to keep an eye on, because it really is a micro version of what could be a much bigger thing. And, you know, a lot of word that this thing in Greece is going to trigger a whole euro-wide kind of contagion in the financial sector. But, you know, of course, that's something that's still being speculated on. We get to see. DB, what do you think about that?
Hey, the immortal words of Justin Timberlake, let's say cry me a river to the bankers. I mean, what are you going to do against 10 million people that are tired of your shit?
There was a guy that I was reading up on Zero Hedge earlier today because I was trying to find out a little more about what's going on in Greece. Anyone not familiar with that site, they're pretty good on financial matters. I like to read their stuff, and it comes from a very independent perspective. They have a lot of guest writers and stuff. Zero Hedge is pretty cool. But anyway, I grabbed some lines off of Zero Hedge, and I'm gonna go into those a little bit right now. Sorry, we had a caller giving us some feedback there.
Hey, buddy, can you speak up a little bit?
Yeah, sorry, you guys can't hear us?
Kind of a little bit, just faintly.
All right, cool. Well, hopefully we're better now. Feel free to chime in if any of this stuff interests you here. But one of the things that I took note of about what's going on in Greece is that more or less you got an older voting block of people that really want to be, you know, stay part of the euro and stay part of, you know, this whole financial system that we have going on over in Europe. But what's becoming more and more apparent, and especially if you look at the protests going on and also word on the street from the people down there, and this is an account that I got from someone that's in Greece right now. But basically what they're saying is that a lot of the young people are pretty much done with this bailout. They're done with the IMF. They're done with the euro. They're like, you know what? Screw it. We're not going to pay all this shit back. We're not the ones that, you know, created all this debt in the first place. You know, these politicians are the ones that got us into this. So they're saying, like, you know what, just default on it and let's rebuild from the ground up. And that's what these guys are. That's what the young people are basically saying in Greece right now. And I think it's a pretty interesting dynamic going on out there. And, you know, you got a lot of the older people saying, nah, they're very conservative. They want to stay part of the you know, the eurozone and remain part of that, you know, currency system because they a lot of their pensions are tied up in it. Now, we got to remember what led to a lot of what's going on in Greece is that, you know, during the financial crisis back in 2008, a lot of their infrastructure and a lot of their, you know, property got kind of sold out to the banksters more or less because their government went bankrupt. So they took this loan from the IMF, but part of the key parts of this agreement was that they privatized a lot of their infrastructure and their transportation and natural resources and things like that. And people like Goldman Sachs and them were basically the ones that were the beneficiaries of all this stuff. And so we got to keep in mind, like, every time we see the IMF going in and out, you know, there's always these, you know, ulterior motives going on, and it's very, very much crony capitalist type of, you know, actions and stuff going on. And so these Greeks kind of got screwed by the IMF and they got taken by the banksters. And now the young people are kind of rebelling against that. And so we're going to see what's going to happen. They've put a limit of 60 bucks on the ATM machine, so, or 60 euro. So people can only get 60 euros a day out of their ATMs. And the banks are closed for the next week. So, you know, we're going to have to see how this plays out. People should definitely keep an eye on Greece. I think that's one of the stories that isn't being talked about enough that could really cause some major upheaval in, you know, southern Europe, you know, Spain, Portugal,
us Italy. Too, Nick.
Yeah, and we're tied in with it as well, you know.
Well,
go ahead.
Just somebody should, if anybody gets interested in researching who's directly bailing out our quantitative easing right now, it's Belgium. And Belgium is basically the kingpin of the EU and the kingpin of the euro scheme. And if Greece decides they don't want to pay back Germany, then all of those southern countries are going to say, screw the north. We want our socialist countries. We want our vacation lifestyle. Forget you guys.
Yeah, and that is what we're starting to see, man. Italy, Spain, Portugal, and Greece, they're all kind of tied up in this. And one of the big worries that are going on with the banksters right now in Europe is that all these countries are going to start deciding that they want to default on their debt. And, you know, that's the worst case scenario for the monetary system over there. And, you know, the fact of the matter is it's probably the best case scenario for the working everyday people. But, you know, keep in mind the media and stuff, it's going to be a lot of like fear mongering and they're going to try to scare the people into getting back in line with the IMF. You know, this is what we're going to see over the next week in Greece, man. They're going to try to really scare the shit out of the population. And we could see some, you know, we may see some mass uprisings as well. There was a huge demonstration today in Greece about anti-austerity measures and stuff. And so, you know, we're already starting to see a lot of the people out there start standing up against this stuff. So we're, you know, it's going to be interesting to watch for sure.
And the EU is propping up the Fed, Nick, and that's what I think a lot of these pre-positioning of military assets within our country are for, because if they're going to decide, meaning the powers that be, between Europe and America, the former colony, you know who's going to win.
Yeah, man, it's a really dangerous game that's being played right now in Europe. So we got to keep an eye on it, see how it develops. Every day it's going to be something new, and like I said, there's going to be a lot of fear mongering. So keep an eye on that. So we're going to go into our next story here, and we got some callers on the line, and we're going to bring all the callers in as well on this, but. The next big story I want to talk about is about the Supreme Court decision about basically legalizing same-sex marriage across the country. And we covered it here on the Anti-Media last week, or on the 26th. And it was basically the case of Obergefell versus Hodges. But anyway, the decision basically said, okay, you know what? Around the whole country, it's going to be legal for same-sex marriage. And to me, this is a really big positive step. And the reason is because it's a step for more equality for people to be free, you know, and marriage is a part of life. It's a part of our culture, and everybody should have the right to it. You shouldn't be excluded from it for any reason, and you shouldn't be privilege to it for any reason, you know what I mean? And so to me, that's a really big step in the right direction. Is it messed up that it took this long and that we had to have a Supreme Court make a decision on it? Yes, because, you know, we should have come to this decision, you know, years and years ago. So first let's go to the caller. Let's hear what the callers have to say on this, and then we have a guest in the studio that we're going to talk with about it. So go ahead.
Okay. All right. So basically, what I was informed on from a couple of other buddies of mine, and just latest research that I've been doing, I've basically just come to the conclusion that the flag and like the same-sex marriage was all just crap, cover up for like the transatlantic or the.
Yeah, he was alluding to something.
I accidentally hung up on the guy. Hopefully he calls back. I think he was trying to talk about the TPP, actually.
Which is a really good point, you know. Of course, this is always more attention than it should get. But it is a good victory. You know, it's a lot of people out there have been just seeking for a basic human right to love freely, you know. And good for them.
Yeah, exactly, man. And you know, it's really big, because now it's another segment of society that is being treated in an equal way. Now think back. I mean, all right, he's calling back. Cool.
Yay, he called back.
Hey, man, sorry, we didn't mean to hang up on you. That was an accident. I think what you're referring to from 813 was the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Go ahead.
You can continue. It's all good. And it was basically just a question that I had. Like, I didn't know. I mean, I don't really know exactly what the whole deal is going on with that, but I heard something else about, like, China is, like, supposed to have some kind of, like, central location in America as well, and that the southern borders of the United States will be, like, kind of eroded away. Hmm. Not, like, land erosion, but, like campaign kind of erosion, like, politics crap.
Yeah, man. So the TPP, I think it definitely does. It definitely has a lot to do with China. And the TPP itself hasn't passed yet. What did pass and what was signed today was where Obama got what they call trade promotion authority, where it allows him. The Congress basically relegated all of their authority as far as negotiating treaties and that kind of thing over to the president. So now the president is going to negotiate the TPP how they've been negotiating it in complete secrecy. And basically he's going to come up with the TPP. He's going to have an agreement to sign. And then it's going to go to Congress, and it's only going to be an up and down vote. There's going to be no debate, no amendments, none of that stuff because of the TPA agreement that just passed. So there is still hope for the TPP, meaning that, like, the Congress could still vote it down once Obama does get it signed. Now, keep in mind that the resistance to the TPP isn't just from people in the U.S. Every country that's
oh, yeah.
the TPP, they're experiencing, like, indigenous strife because of the TPP, because most of the regular working people are like, no, this thing is a bad idea. We all know these trade agreements. You guys always claim it's one thing when in actuality it's a complete different thing. Now, the thing today that I noticed from some of the news outlets was that Obama, I forget what it's called, it was a little clause that came along with this TPA agreement, and it was basically to set aside funds to retrain people that lose their jobs from the TPP. So this is the thing that kind of struck me as pretty ironic, is that they're claiming that this thing is going to make a bunch of American jobs and stuff, but like Obama went and signed something today to like put a bunch of money towards retraining people that lose their jobs because of the TPP. You know what I mean? And so like it's kind of like they're already projecting, you know, job losses and stuff like that. Go ahead.
They earmarked enough money to pay 30 million people for 2 years. That's the expected impact.
Yeah, see, I mean, and there you go right there. Like they're telling us one thing, is like, "Oh, this trade agreement's going to fix our economy, it's going to boost our economy." While at the same time they're putting enough money to pay for 2 years worth of 30 million people. So obviously they're expecting a bunch of job losses. What is the TPP actually going to do? Well, it's basically, we've talked about this before. It's a giant corporate bailout. It's going to assure the corporations access to a lot of markets and a lot of cheap labor. And all of the people that rely on regular working jobs in all these countries are basically going to get the short end of the stick. Automation is going to take the place of human labor, and AI is going to take the place of a lot of the management stuff. And we're going to see the development of a very, very corporatized economy under the TPP. I think, you know, that's what I think is going to happen. Go ahead.
I'm assuming it's just going to lead to a bunch of outsourcing and everybody's going to get poor, and then everything's going to hit the fan. So what do you think is the deal with like the EU and like NATO and, the blue helmets coming over here and like making like some one world government kind of thing? Cause isn't that also what the TPP is about as well?
I mean, we can get into some weird theories about it, but yeah, in general, what you're saying is true, because it's going to give corporations more power than governments. So what happens when a bunch of multinational corporations run things, really, they literally run it. That is a one world government de facto by these huge transnationals, and they have private armies now. So what are we going to do? What are we going to do about it?
Well, yeah, I think part of the thing with the TPP, you know, and like the thing is that corporations hate borders, right? But governments love borders, and they both hate them and love them for the wrong reasons. So what this does is it very much, in a way, it erases all the borders for the corporations for the wrong reasons, like for the reasons of exploiting labor, for monopolizing on marketplaces and things like that. So yeah, it's a very detrimental, it's going to be very harmful for entrepreneurs and local business and stuff like that, I think. And it's going to be basically handing over all the industry over to Walmart and those types of businesses, you know, and that's the scary thing about the TPP. And it takes Walmart and McDonald's global to a new level that it's never seen before, that really entrenches it in over top of the government. Like these corporate tribunals being set up by the TPP, they're under this agreement, their final say is more powerful than like even like the Supreme Courts and stuff like that of all these local countries. So yeah, it's a very dangerous prospect. Thankfully, it's not passed yet. There was some memes and stuff going around, and InfoWars said that it actually passed. The TPP has not passed yet. It's just the TPA, which gives Obama the authority to negotiate it. It can still be stopped in the Congress. I mean, there's still a fighting chance. Is the chance that it's going to stop pretty slim? Yeah, I think so, because the Congress has, what, a 9% approval rating? Do you think they're actually going to, this one time, they're actually going to jump up and actually represent people and say, yeah, we're going to actually stand up for you guys this time? I don't know. It's pretty doubtful. We got Manny Aguilar on the phone from Los Angeles. Manny, how you doing tonight, man? You want to chime in on this?
Yeah, well, you know, we own China, you know, a lot of money. So if they want to get collected today, man, we'd be giving the United States up, including Chula Vista, stuff like that, you know. So, and it's really kind of hard of the things I've seen in Mexico and stuff like that, you know, just, the whole world's going crazy and stuff like that. I'm just very fortunate to be back instead of locked up for 90 days. Got to in jail, and, you know, that's not a good thing, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, and so I just really been keeping up with a lot of stuff, you know, with the Confederate flag and all that. Now, getting back to, before I start that conversation, I want to send some love to D.D. Shorts. Thank you for remembering my birthday, to Brother Shannon Manning, and also to S.M. Gibson and all that. I was kind of wondering, hey, what happened to brother Nick Burnaby and Jaime and brother Jake Anderson? But oh well, you know, I'll settle for a six pack and we'll call it even. You know,
I'll get you a six pack next time you're in town, man.
Okay.
So what do you think about this TPP agreement, dude? What are the repercussions in Latin America, and what are the people down there thinking about it?
Well, that's where I was going with it. I'm glad you asked me again, because basically people would say, well, what's that got to do with Mexico? Well, basically what happened is we're comparing the TPP with the NAFTA thing. The NAFTA was for the rich people. Basically, it's that simple. That's how we were looking at it and stuff like that, you know? Now another comment about how the victory for the gay community will marriage and stuff like that. The only thing that I basically would like them to add to this whole thing, and we need to focus on that now, which is part of the equality process, is we need to start also paying attention to our transgender brothers and sisters, you know. So.
Yeah, man, that's a good point. Transgender people really face some of the worst odds out there. You know, some crazy percentage, like over 25% die from suicide, dude, because the culture is not susceptible to it, you know. And a lot of people, the population, millions of people that are, you know, sexually innovative, I like to call it, because I don't like to put a label on it, that don't practice the typical man and woman marriage type of thing, you know, they, for the longest time, they faced such a stigma. And I've got a friend of mine, she's in her 70s, and she's been a lesbian activist for, you know, since the 70s, dude, for, you know, since the 60s even. And and you know, the struggle has been for so long, 50 years they've been struggling, and finally they're getting a little bit of validation from the Supreme Court, and it's a big victory, I think. But the other thing as well is that the oppression hasn't ended, dude. Like, we just posted a story on the anti-media a couple days ago about these two kids that got stabbed up in Sacramento, and they got stabbed because they were gay, dude. Like, some guys rolled up on them, they called them skinny jean wearing faggots, and literally just stabbed them because they were gay. And so the oppression,
or assumed, you know, because of their skinny jeans.
Yeah, and they just assumed it. So just because now we have marriage equality, the oppression doesn't end, man. And me and Jaime were talking about this earlier, about when we were back in high school. You know, only one or two people were willing to come out of the closet back in high school because there was such a stigma. Afterwards, you know, we find out that there's dozens and dozens of people that we went to school with that are, you know, gay, lesbian, trans, whatever.
You know, we actually have one transgender member of our class, and it was a shock when we first heard it, but it's pretty cool. Our class, it turned out to be pretty representative of just the whole spectrum, I guess.
I think this whole thing is going to have some backlash too, because when the media puts something in people's face and they're already kind of against it, they're going to say, hey, you know what, you're shoving this down my throat now. This is part of an agenda. Well, the agenda is ultimately equality for everybody, but if people have that stigma, if they do have that phobia, the fear of perhaps something that they quite can't understand, you're going to see these kind of like random attacks and things like that.
You know what? And I agree with you. I totally agree with you. I feel like now that we have this victory, we should just leave it as is. I feel like I've seen some things on my Instagram and my Facebook that are pretty insulting. It's like, I don't think we have to rub it in people's faces. You know, some, I've seen Christian posts like, hey, you know, we're respecting your values, respect ours, you know, and I agree with that. I agree that everybody should just stick to what they believe in. This is just a universal, I guess, way of saying you do as you wish, you know?
Exactly, man. And so, like, you know, it comes down to, like, a lot of it comes down to, like, personal freedom and you know, it's unacceptable for Christian people to say, hey, you know what, we shouldn't allow gay people to marry. But it's also unacceptable for gay people to say, oh, well, we should be allowed to marry in your church, even if you're against it. You know, so like,
yeah,
you,
that's
like,
totally disrespectful.
I think what it all comes down to, once again, man, and to me, this is what really it strikes part of the larger picture here, is that if people cared less about what other people did and more just worried about their own shit, it's like, you can be against gay marriage, man, as long as you're not trying to say, hey, no gay people should be allowed to get married. As long as you're like, okay, I might be against it personally, but it's okay if other people want to do it. That's where we start making major headway in civilization as a whole, not just in the US, not just in Mexico, not just in the Western Hemisphere, everywhere, man. A lot of the root of the problems that we face as a society everywhere is that we divide ourselves among these petty lines where we say, oh, we can't allow people to do this or do that, even if it doesn't harm you. And we allow that to divide us, and then the powers that be use that against us as like a fracturing system to fracture people into fighting each other instead of starting to realize, hey, just like in Greece, it's like, hey, dude, we're starting to realize this bailout was a heist. You guys just jacked us for a bunch of money and bailed out all the banks, and then all the poor people are stuck with all the debt. You know, and so like I think in Greece you're starting to see those lines break down and those people are starting to come together. I mean, this week is going to tell us a lot about what's going on in Europe. We're going to have to see it play out.
I kind of see that. That might be a benefit, you know?
Yeah, Monday tonight. Tonight is Monday, and today's only the first day of the banks being closed. We're going to see this play out all week, and we're going to see if those lines dissolve and the people just unite. Greece has done it before, man. So
Nick, what holiday's coming up, and what's historically happened on a 3-day weekend whenever banks have a problem?
Which one are you talking about? Independence Day?
Nah, go back to the early 1900s, man.
Depression, 1920.
There you go. So how would that be a nice rub in the face on the 4th of July?
What was it?
You're right, baby. But yeah, Brother Nick, you're right about what you just said and stuff like that, you know, and what my Mocha brother over here, Jaime, said was very true too, you know. But I think solve a lot of the problems is we have to start listening to each other, understanding each other. Even if Jaime or you and I don't agree on something, can we just put love into it and kind of be gentle and at the same time be respectful with each other, even if
we
don't agree?
Yeah, exactly. I agree. I agree to disagree.
Be real gentle.
Yeah, man, but that's the key, dude. Like, there's all these different issues, bro, and all these things going on. Like, the whole thing with the TPP, the only reason this shit's allowed to advance, the only reason the TPP is allowed to go through right now is because we're busy fighting over the flags. We're busy fighting over whether it's okay or not to be gay and to marry. All of these issues should already have been put to rest, dude. Like,
right.
We shouldn't even be fighting over this stuff anymore. That shit is Stone Age shit. We should have evolved way past that. But now we're sitting here fighting over that. And like they're pulling the TPP wool right over everybody's eyes, dude. And they're ready to pull off an enormous heist. And now back to what the caller was, what you brought up, 813, about China, man. And this is what the whole TPP thing is. DB is the first one to bring it to my attention, is that really it's an economic encircling of China, dude. It's a buffer zone. It's an economic buffer zone where they're going to say, you know, when the TPP gets implemented in a couple of years down the line, we could shift all of our manufacturing away from China. And then, you know, they got the other trade deal, the TPIP going on with Europe. And this could be the whole thing where they're trying to use all these little countries and instead of exploiting China's labor, exploit all these little countries' slave labor like Malaysia and Thailand and all this stuff to make all of our goods instead. And then we could use that as a way to counterbalance China economically, because obviously they're the fastest growing economic powerhouse in the world.
But see, what the TPP is doing, Nick, is it's trying to make China play its hand. All right, it's trying to make it feel like war is inevitable. And to fight us now while we have a huge technological advantage over them still. And this is getting rid of an adversary before it can beat us, forcing it to fight, kind of like we did with Japan in World War II.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting prospect, dude. But yeah, definitely this TPP thing is a calculation. It's a geopolitical move. It's a huge part in their containment of China. You know, Obama came into power and ever since he came in, he's been talking about pivoting towards Asia. And this is his final move, dude. This is his final pivot. Like, this TPP thing, it puts China in a vise, dude. It really does. It puts them in a vise, and then we can just tighten that vise down whenever we want them to move there, you know, whenever we want to move them, dude. Like, we're really good at controlling countries, dude. We're really good at setting up puppet regimes and stuff like that. And this, the TPP is going to help us solidify our puppet regime in China.
And ultimately, if it does lead to war, war will fix the economy and it'll depop. And those are both two things they want to do in one fell swoop. So there you go.
Yeah, and let's be real. The government has never shied away from war. In fact, they've shown that they're more likely to lie their way into war than they are to lie their way out of war. You know, that more often than not, they bullshit their way into fighting these countries and stuff. And like right now, this whole thing with Russia, dude, like the threat of Russia is like way overblown. Our military budget is 10 times larger than their military budget. Their navy is way smaller than our navy. They've got one military base outside of their own borders. I mean, we're talking about a country that is peanuts, dude. But they're being played up as this huge threat to world peace, and oh my god, they're gonna take over the world. It's like communist threat all over again, Cold War 2.0.
They have ICBMs that we'd probably have a problem shooting down, but that's about it. Their conventional army is piss poor. I mean, China could steamroll them if they didn't have those nukes.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. Russia does have a lot of good technology, and they've got a bunch of nukes. In fact, I mean, on paper, they've got more nukes than we do. But when it comes down to their geopolitical reach and the size of their empire and the strength of their navy and their conventional, you know, weaponry, dude, they're nothing compared to the U.S.
No, nobody is. China's reaching our level in maybe 20 years. That's why they're trying to egg them on now.
Yeah, exactly, man. You make a really good point with that. I never really thought about it as much militarily. I did know that it was the TPP was a containment thing, but yeah, maybe they want them to try to show their military hand because, you know, if you look at China in recent times, dude, they haven't invaded any country. They haven't supported really any big civil war in any big way. I mean, you know, Russia still does support Assad and, you know, regimes like that, but China hasn't really done any major proxy wars or anything, dude. They haven't done any military stuff.
We are fighting them in Africa. You just got to dig to find that out. We are fighting them in Africa right now. But the main thing, man, is that China really can't do much because its population's so huge that if they stretch their supply chain anymore, they'll have a famine.
Yeah, they've already got so many people and so many people that are in poverty that, dude, if China crunches too much, they're going to have a rebellion on their hands, dude, no matter how propagated their people are. And if you look historically, that's been China's problem. They've always fought inwardly. They've never really been – there's been period of imperial China, but it's only been factions of China uniting with each other. You know, it's like just the Chinese territories joining each other. They've never really been expansionary outside of when they were under Mongolian rule. You know,
they lost territory. I mean, consistently, they've always, whenever somebody's invaded them, they've been able to, you know, kind of take them over because of that whole thing you were talking about, Nick. All the dynasties have always fought each other. So even though they're the same cultural people, they're like totally divided up into, I guess, clans at this point.
Yeah, very tribal in their ways of things, and that's been China's plague for the longest time. I don't really see China as an imperial threat. They are an economic powerhouse and they have a big military and they're good. You know, I think they'd be able to defend themselves pretty damn well. I don't think anyone's going to get away with invading China like Japan did back in World War II. But I don't think they're a huge imperial threat. I think they're more business wise. And that's what's funny is that even though they're communists, a lot of people have said that they're more capitalist than America, man. They make really good investments overseas. They buy good infrastructure. They build railroads. They build things like that. And, you know, that's all they've been doing, dude. And I haven't really seen them do any really aggressive militarism outside of their own disputed island. Like, yeah, there's those islands in the South China Sea that are disputed and all that stuff. And, dude, they're just a couple tiny islands. And, yeah, there is some geopolitical, you know, strategy to having those. But oil. They're not sitting there, you know, overthrowing countries and stuff like that. Yeah, they crack down on their own people. But in the end, the U.S. foreign policy is much more dangerous, much more coercive and subjecting than Chinese foreign policy, man. And so that's where I think our focus should be, is not trying to counter China, but, dude, dealing with our own empire, dude, and acknowledging the fact that our you know, most of our foreign policy moves are driven by corporate agenda. But, you know, we're not yet having any kind of government that's willing to, you know, take that kind of stuff on. And whenever you do have a person like Ron Paul or a guy like Bernie Sanders or someone that wants to challenge that system, well, they're automatically written off and they can't be elected. And, you know, yeah, everybody acknowledges the problem with politics is that there's too much money in it. But guys like Ron Paul and Bernie Sanders can't get elected because they don't have enough money. It's like so contradictory. But yeah, anytime someone tries to challenge that system, they get beaten down by the media. And it's not any kind of mystery why, but it's because the media is owned by the same corporations that are the ones building these weapons, that are the ones making the money, the Halliburtons and the Raytheons and all these companies. So we're going to move on to another story here because this all these war drums, man, the TPP, all we can do now, I think, with the TPP is just keep sharing the links, keep getting people to call your congressman again. the congressmen suck, so I don't expect much out of them, but I guess, you know, better than doing nothing. And pressure these people in public, man. If you can get, if you can embarrass them, if you can get out there and make them uncomfortable and get protesters at all of their, you know, all, every time they have a speaking engagement, if you can get protesters out there, dude, that makes more of an effect than people calling, because they can just ignore the calls. You can't ignore the protesters even if you try. You know, that's,
exactly. Well, if we can't beat the protesters, and if the protesters can't beat the government, why don't we just pull a fucking Columbus and just re-fucking take America? And just kick all the corporate banksters out like Iceland and Greenland did.
Hey, man, that's what a lot of people have been thinking lately, dude.
That's a goal.
Yeah.
Join us.
How do we get the cops basically to turn sides? Is we got to make sure they know they're not getting paid by them if the system continues. Tell them we're gonna stall this economy out. We're going to boycott every part of the economy if you cops don't arrest those dudes.
Yeah, man. And you know what's funny?
The cops are on it too.
Iceland. Iceland went that route, and they kind of arrested all those bankster fools that got them into that financial crisis. And guess what? They're now the first. They're on the verge of being the first European country to get back to pre-crisis economic activity. So their economy. They didn't take the bailout. They didn't bail out any of the corporate, any of the banks. They arrested the fools that were responsible, and now their economy is on a faster pace to recover than any other economy in Europe.
They went to silverback currency, I believe, off of the euro. And what that did was make the police realize they were about to get paid directly by the citizenry.
Yeah, man. And it's a different culture out there, dude. The cops there have only killed one guy ever. It's a whole different thing. Manny, go ahead. What were you going to say?
Yeah, I have a question now that DB actually said about silver. What's going on with that story that I've been hearing about ISIS creating their own gold coin? What's that about?
And all the oil they have is going to be paid for in their own gold, and they're going to determine the transaction rate.
Oh, okay. Thank
you. Yeah, that's pretty interesting, man. ISIS has coined its own currency, and they're going to do all their thing in that. I mean, ISIS now has become. I mean, dude, I don't think they're going to be beat, dude. ISIS isn't going to be beat, dude. There's no way. What's going to happen is Syria, Iraq are going to lose a part of their territory. ISIS is going to become its own country. And they're going to just go ahead and build that Sunni pipeline that they've been trying to build. And everything's going to be okay. Assad's going to be able to live. And even though he's lost his strategic value to Putin, he's got a base. Russia's only foreign base is right there in Syria. They have a Navy base there. So, you know, Assad's going to still remain a partner with Russia. ISIS is going to be a partner with Saudi Arabia. They're going to build their pipeline. They cut Russia out of the equation. Then they're going to start up a whole new Cold War, man. And then we're going to see what goes on after that. But as far as it looks right now, man, shit, dude, it doesn't look like ISIS is going to be unseated. They're just going to split those countries up. And here's the thing that to me is kind of like where in the end, a lot of the local people are going to be better off, and it kind of sucks to see it this way, but it's kind of the reality, is when those lines were drawn, when those countries were made back in the day, they were done by, you know, I think it was done right after World War II, and the empires basically split all those countries up. Iraq, all those borders and stuff were drawn by the empires in World War I. So those countries weren't actually split the way that they should have been split. Iraq shouldn't be that shape, dude. That northern part and the northern part of Syria should be a different country because those people believe in a completely different ideology. It's Sunni in the north side, and it's Shia in the south. So, you know, it doesn't make sense that those people have to be under the influence of the government in Baghdad, because the government in Baghdad is a Shia government. And so they believe in one form of government, and the people in the north believe in a complete different one. And that's why when ISIS started sweeping in, it wasn't like they were just, oh, how are they conquering all this land and all this? Well, it's because the people were at least semi-receptible to their ideology, because they at least believed in the same form of Islam, you know. And so even though ISIS is this brutal, they have these brutal war tactics and stuff, I could see them in peacetime being relatively stable Sunni, you know, caliphate or whatever you want to call them. Not saying that what they've done is horrible, but it's still small beans compared to the shit that the U.S. government has done. I mean, we're responsible for 1 million Iraqi deaths since 9/11. I mean, ISIS has killed, what, 100,000? Yeah, that's horrible, but we're responsible for 1 million, dude. I mean, we have no moral authority over top of them. So the reason why ISIS did what it did so quickly is because the people up there identify more with them than they do the people in Baghdad. So I think all this stuff is going to get split up, and all these countries are going to be, you know, their borders are going to be redrawn. But in the end, the people that are going to win are going to be the oil interests, and of course the people that are selling the guys all the weapons, and then the guys that are going to make the money from the oil, and then of course the U.S. government, the banking establishment is going to benefit from preserving the petrodollar. Because in the end, this whole thing with ISIS, everything in Syria, Ukraine, it's all involved in trying to stem the flow of resources from Russia into Europe and replace those resources with Persian Gulf oil and American-made natural gas, which we're getting from all the fracking. You know, this is the whole goal, the whole geopolitical chess match that's going on, and we're winning it, dude. The U.S. is winning it, but the price that's being paid right now is in blood. It's in a bunch of people dying because we're starting to win. We're beating Russia at their own game. We're outmaneuvering Russia. Are we doing it in the wrong way? Yes. We're doing it with brute force. We're doing it with giving a bunch of weapons to all these rebels. We're doing it with overthrowing governments and stuff. But we're still winning. And it's really sad to think of it that way, but it actually boosts the American way of life up for as long as possible, as long as they can keep this petrodollar afloat. It's going to continue to boost our way of life, and it's horrible that the way it's being done, dude, but... You know, this is something that we have to think about, and when it comes down to like a lot of this stuff about how they try to divide us and separate us along the lines of gay marriage and along the lines of race and along the lines of all these other things, it all comes down to keeping the American public subjugated while these guys go about manipulating and controlling and preserving and profiting from the petrodollar. You know, and that's what it all really comes down to. DB, you there?
Oh yeah, I'm here, but you—that was just hypnotizing, man.
Dude, no more talking about the petrodollar tonight, man. Let's move on to some news stories. I got this one that's like pretty positive here from Kerry Wedler at Anti-Media, and basically it's this new app that these students invented from Berkeley to help feed homeless people, and now they've fed like 575,000 homeless people with this thing. It's basically a program to donate uneaten food from the university's dining halls. That's how it started, to local homeless shelters. But now the program has spread to over 140 different colleges. So basically a bunch of this excess food from these colleges is going out, and now it's being like given out to people that are actually hungry. And this is a great idea because, I mean, if you look at the raw numbers from the U.S., the amount of people that go hungry is, like, astronomical. It's in the millions. And the fact is that we throw away about, like, half of our food. We waste a lot of it. You know what I mean? So, I mean, these kind of ideas now, I'm glad they're starting to become popular because people, like, why throw this shit away when it's perfectly good food and there's hungry people out there? It's like... One plus one equals two. I mean, it's perfect, makes perfect sense. But for so long, and you know, we've seen it in these recent cases. You remember that guy down in Florida, that pastor that got arrested like three times for feeding homeless people. You know, and we're starting to see that, you know, more and more governments around the country are treating homelessness as some kind of crime or some kind of disease, and they're like, oh, we can't feed the homeless because then it's going to just attract more and more homeless. Dude, well, the fact of the matter is we're going to have homeless people around here no matter what, you know, and you guys are going to keep starting up all these wars, sending these guys out into the battle, messing their heads up, bringing them back home, not giving them any benefits, not giving them any kind of way to fix them other than just feeding them opiates. And you wonder why there's so many people out on the streets, and then you want to go ban them. Well, thankfully there's kids, students at Berkeley that are coming up with apps like this to actually help these people, because obviously the VA isn't doing the job, the government isn't doing the job. We got a huge story we're working on, and I can't elaborate too much on it because it's pretty sensitive information, but it's about a guy that really got screwed over by the you know, military and the VA and all this stuff. And I mean, it's when you hear about these stories and you start saying about what's actually going on. And we were just talking about this with Syria and Ukraine and how they're starting all these wars. They're sending guys over to fight ISIS and all this stuff, and then they come home and then they don't do shit to help them out. It's a problem that's not going to go away, and so we got to start acting as a culture to deal with it and stop, you know, stigmatizing homelessness and treating people that are homeless like shit. and acting like they're less human, dehumanizing them. That's just the most absurd way of going about it. But unfortunately, that's the case. And, you know,
just give everybody an acre, a yurt, and a freaking like windmill. We're good.
Where do we sign the petition?
40 acres and a mule. That was the promise back in the day, wasn't it?
An acre and a windmill.
I'm good with 1 acre, dude. And we're homies, so we can share both of our acres.
So, you know, here's the thing.
And then you're a homie too, right? So there's already 3 acres we can have.
Yeah, we got 3 acres here. here's the thing, dude. And on that point, you know, the federal government controls about 650 million acres of land. I think 40% of it is out here in the West. But huge swaths of Nevada, Alaska, Idaho is like 80% federal land or something. Wyoming, all these states, man, a lot of that countryside is all federal land. There's 650 million acres. There's like 300 million Americans. That's enough for like 2 acres for each and every person. So, I mean, that's something to think about too. If we're going to start, as the caller was mentioning, if we're going to start, you know, taking it back into our own hands, dude, there's a good place to start. 650 million acres. Let's divvy that up between the bunch of us, man, and see what happens, you know. But it's one of those ideas where it's so big and it's so scary, I guess you could say. People are overwhelmed by it. But dude, it's this idea.
Well, I think the problem with that would be is like, well, what if everybody's going to want the San Diego corner?
It'll have to be like a random lottery.
No.
Just kidding. I mean, maybe you'll get something like in the heart of Iowa and have an acre of prime corn growing and make like $100,000 a year from it.
Yeah. Give and take, I suppose.
Hey, you never know, man.
I like the land lottery, dude, because that's just giving up a little more than half with 330 million people here. And everybody gets an acre. It'll still leave the government with like 290 million acres left. And that's plenty.
Dude,
so easy. We should put you up for the presidential seat for 2016.
Yeah, DB Schwartz 2016. You got to be better than Jeb Bush, right?
I don't know. That guy's bilingual.
Shit. He got you, bro.
Don't forget about my candidate out there to vote for my candidate. Nobody.
Yeah, dude, we gotta. That's who I'm voting for, man. But
why not Manny Trump, for labor rep?
Donald Trump almost had me until he went and started saying all Mexicans are rapists and drug dealers.
What an idiot! Yeah. He lost the Miss America is not being shown anywhere south of the border anymore.
Hey, they actually NBC canceled it.
NBC, Univision, they all fired his ass.
That's Univision, okay, it's Spanish. Univision.
See, that's what's cool, man. People aren't putting up with bigotry no more, dude. That's good. You know, that's a really good thing, man. And we were talking about it at the beginning of the show with the gay marriage ruling, dude. And of course, there's always going to be bigots out there, dude. But the ones that are – the problem with bigots is that they become politicians and they get laws passed. And that's the problem. If there's bigots out there, there's going to be bigots out there. And as long as they're not killing people or stabbing people because of something, okay. I'm okay with there being bigots existing as long as they're not harming people. They're idiots. Fine. They're ignorant. Fine. That's cool. Whatever. That's their own life.
Let's give them Texas.
Yeah. Let them have one of these states like Arizona or something. Let them have it. And all the cool people in Arizona can move out here to Southern California, dude. And we could all chill and smoke weed together and not be bothered by the cops and all that. But the problem with bigots is that they get laws passed too, man. And for the longest time, I mean, shit, interracial marriage was banned for the longest time. I mean, you know, dude, like people living together that weren't married was banned in a lot of places. I mean, shit, dude. I mean, these guys really legislate their way into these deep, you know, religious rabbit holes. And I'm have nothing against religion per se. But it's when they start to infiltrate the lawmaking, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's fine that these guys want to do what they do and do their thing. But, dude, stop making everybody else try to do your thing with you. You know, you're thinking like ISIS if you're thinking like that. You know what I mean? As extreme as that sound.
I'm glad, Nick, you're saying that today. Because today I was talking to my people after getting back after all these years. And I was telling them, I said, you know, one of the things about the Constitution, because everybody's focused on the Confederate flag, which, you know, I mean, I took one down in Utah, of all places. I took a lot of heat in Utah, you know, St. George, to be exact, you know, right on the front page. Nobody can miss me, you know, so, but I do what I got to do, right?
And bottom line is, that's why I was proud of that sister going all the way up there and taking the flag down. But the thing here that I was actually kind of, you know, looking at the whole thing at the Constitution, which was really sad to me, that a lot of our founding fathers that wrote the Constitution were slave owners. And then to compromise with other people that disagreed, counting a poor black man as three-fifths as a human instead of counting them as a human completely. Three-fifths. I mean, come on. How can you count somebody as three-fifths, you know?
Yeah, man. It's completely dehumanizing, dude. And it's, you know, it just goes to show we haven't come that – it's only been several decades since, you know, we've had some really egregious – things, dude. The women weren't even able to vote until the 1900s, dude. I mean, this is like, you know, it's like, how in the hell are we, you know, barely at that point? You know, we should have been there a long time ago. But
today, Sydney posted up an article too about the women's rights.
Yeah, man. And in many countries around the world today on the Anti-Media, we compiled the top five countries that are the worst for women. And dude, the stuff that women still go through around the world, and here in the U.S., we still have sexism, and you know, it's very evident in the corporate world, and it's very evident in the government. I mean, look at the situation with the president. We haven't even had a woman president yet, and the one chance we have is Hillary. And shit, dude, Hillary sucks for anybody. It doesn't matter that she's a woman; she sucks all around. They're not even giving us a valid option, dude. But you know. It's been such a short time in the U.S. that the women's suffrage movement has come into fruition. But around the world, dude, women are still being treated like shit in almost every country. You know what I mean? And so we're still a very, very far, you know, distance away from getting even basic rights for people, whether we're talking about women's rights or we're talking about, you know, oppression of minorities. And, you know, oppression of minority goes on in almost every culture around the world as well. In Mexico, they oppress the indigenous. In China, they oppress the Muslims. Here in the U.S., people are obviously racist against black people and Muslims and Mexicans. And, I mean, dude, it goes on everywhere, dude. And it's like, when are we finally going to get to the point where we don't even have to deal with the oppression anymore, dude?
America's but against everything organic.
In the U.S., dude, in the U.S., we're barely getting there. But in other countries, I mean, as bad as the U.S. is on so many things, man, at least we're pretty good when it comes to human rights. We're better than a lot of these countries, dude. And you look at some of these countries that we covered today, like Sudan and places like that, where they treat women like, dude, like complete shit. Forced marriages, 14 years old, they literally forcing their 14-year-old daughters to get married to these dudes and all this kind of thing. I mean, this stuff still happens, man. It's a global struggle, and we just got to keep fighting for, you know, fighting against injustice, fighting for justice everywhere. Everywhere we speak, wherever we spend our money, don't buy from these countries that are doing these horrible things. And of course, with TPP, it erases a lot of those lines, dude. So,
and
don't
a lot
forget
of those...
our friends in Animal Kingdom, by the way. Okay.
No.
Go ahead, DB.
That threw me off. What was the Animal Kingdom?
I said, and don't forget our friends, how they're being mistreated here, cruelly in the Animal Kingdom. The way they put pigs in cages and chickens and 20 chickens in one cage and stuff like that. I mean, it's so inhumane. I can't believe it's happening in this country, you know?
Yeah, we should have to kill the meat we eat, I think. I mean, I'm ready to start hunting. At least that way you're doing it yourself and you're not subjecting them to factory farming lives that have to be, like, horrible.
Exactly.
Yeah, man, exactly. And we're still treating humans that way, too, you know? And in the whole TPP deal, some of the countries like Malaysia that we're trying to secure this trade deal with, dude, they still practice slave labor. They still practice sex slavery. They child labor, child slavery. I mean, dude, we're trying to get into bed with all these countries that do all this shit still, you know, and it kind of shows us where our moral compass is. Like, are we negotiating this trade deal upon ethical standards? No, we're negotiating upon geopolitics. It's about containing China. It's not about, you know, trading with legitimate trade partners and making good business. It's like, that's not even what it's about. If that was what it's about, it wouldn't be with Malaysia and these kind of countries. But it is, you know, and that's what these guys are doing. We can't be fooled and allow Obama to sit there at the Nike factory, which is ironic as hell because Nike has been one of those companies been known to exploit child labor and things like that. And Obama's sitting there at the Nike factory like, yeah, we got to just do it when we sign the TPP and stuff. It's like, dude, are you serious, man? You're going to let it – you're gonna
just do it.
Tell us this from the Nike factory.
Ship your job overseas. Just do it.
Just do it, baby. And like
a swish shaped pen.
Yeah, dude. And here's the funny thing is that actually happened. He literally did that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he literally did that, and I couldn't believe when it happened. But yeah, he did that, and so. Yeah, man. I mean, these guys are just taking it. You know,
we are in no way corporate, but
such an Orwellian direction, dude. And they slap us in the face with this shit. Nike from the Nike factory. The president's out there telling us to just do it.
What was he at least wearing? Some pretty fresh Nikes.
Yeah, he was wearing some Air Nikes and Air Force Ones and shit. Yeah, he was good. He's got style, man, to say the least. He may be an oligarch, but at least he's got style. You know,
he does. He's pretty sexy. He used to be sexier when he was like running for president, but then now he's...
Yeah, once he got elected, he became boring and just another oligarch that nobody...
There's a good reason you might think he's sexy.
Yeah, if stereotypes are to be believed. Moving forward.
You just like him because he's powerful, man.
I like power.
Thankfully, you didn't vote for him. I didn't vote for him. I didn't buy his crap.
I would have voted for him.
I can't say the same for DB, but it only fooled him once. Shame on you if he fooled you twice. Now, shame on everybody if they vote for Bush, though.
Yeah, definitely.
Or Hillary, because, geez.
Well, Hillary... I like Hillary. Just kidding.
So, I mean, what else do we want to talk about tonight, man? Because we got these terror attacks that went on, too, that were going on. And we got ISIS rampant everywhere. You got...
I think the caller wanted Bernie Sanders, Nick.
You want to talk about Bernie Sanders? What do you want to talk about, caller?
Why don't we... Oh, go ahead, man.
All right. Do you think that he would be a good president for our country?
As long as he could stay alive, that would be my only
fear.
That's
what I'm saying. Yeah, right.
Damn. You know, it'd be very important who his VP is to make sure that VP is basically him on steroids, so that if they did something stupid, they'd get someone even worse.
Yeah. So you know, here's the thing for me, dude, to keep in mind, because I'm not a huge fan of the electoral system and stuff, but you know, Obama more in a way ran on Bernie Sanders' platform in 2008, right? In a much softer tone and stuff, but in a way, he really did have that populist platform and anti-Wall Street and all that, and then we saw how that worked out, you know. And then you see Bernie Sanders, and you see him as, to me, I see him as a very Ron Paul-like, principled, liberal, socialist guy that actually stands by what he means, what he says. And then you know, you got to wonder, okay, well then, you know, is he really principled? And if he is, are they going to give him a chance? And even if they do give him a chance, like DB said, are they going to let him live? You know, there's like so many contingencies that go into it, you know, where it's like you got a guy like Ron Paul and it's like, okay, well, Ron Paul actually believes in what he says. And, you know, he actually thinks we should close down all of our foreign military bases and stuff. Okay, well, we're just not going to give that guy a shit's chance in hell to win. You know, and that's what
I'm worried about. Break up all the banks and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, man, and that's what I'm worried about with Bernie Sanders. He's very against he's come out against the banking system. He's indirectly against the foreign policy, the massive foreign policy, the military spending. He's very much a nation first type of guy, like a home, like he's a, you know, nation builder at home, you know, kind of like build our bridges instead of blowing them up and then rebuilding them in Iraq kind of guy. I don't think he's going to get the play that he should get. I think he's got a valid message, and I think that his message makes sense because we are spending these trillions and trillions of dollars every year, right? We're spending all this money, and it's like, what the shit are we getting for it? You know, a bunch of fucking terrorists. We're fighting a trillion-dollar war on terror, and all we get is like a lot more terrorists. Like, why isn't the problem being fixed? So I think Bernie Sanders is going to make a legitimate plan.
Terrorists are just ending the country.
What was that?
Yeah. I said it's because we have more terrorists, it's because we're going to war over bullshit reasons like oil, and the terrorists are just people like us sticking up for their country when a bunch of assholes are just running up in there taking all their oil.
Yeah, I mean, man, you make a valid point. There's actually studies that back
hit it on the head. Hit it on the head.
We're coming to the end of the show. Thank you all for tuning in. Jaime, thanks for being on. All the callers, thanks for tuning in. Catch us tomorrow, 5 days a week. The Anti-Media Radio. Peace.
What up, guys?
Peace, man. I'ma let him know do the stereo. Yo, here we go. Go do the stereo. Stereo.